Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. Hope you've had a good year, or at least made it through the year. Today we're going to be playing Andy Green's interview with Mr. Bob Seger, and we have Andy Green himself here in the studio. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Pretty good. And Bob Seger has a newish album out called I Knew You When. It came out November 17th. It's a very strong album, and Bob happens to be an artist that we're very fond of, I think both of us.
Yeah, I love Bob Seger for my entire life, and he hasn't really had a ton of time in the spotlight in the past few years, but his shows are fantastic, and he still packs arenas, and his voice is still very strong. I mean, I love the guy. I think Seger's voice, especially in the 60s and 70s, is one of the all-time great rock voices.
And a great, great, melancholic, often songwriter, underrated, and someone who had a more interesting career than most people know about. We've both been lucky enough to talk to him. And one of the things you can talk to him about is just that he started in the same Detroit scene as Iggy Pop, you know, as the Stooges. He was a total garage rocker. The singer-songwriter Bob Seger that most people know him was just, you know, the second or third phase of his career.
Yeah, I mean, Springsteen's years of struggles, they dwarf what Seger went through. He started in 1963 or whatever and didn't break big until 76. He had one hit in around 68 or so, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. Besides that, he was in the proto-punk scene alongside the MC5 and the Stooges and all these bands. And then in the early 70s, he was doing like 200 and some shows a year in clubs and bars, making no money, selling no albums, but just working incessantly.
And the album, he covers Lou Reed's Busload of Faith, which is, you know, if you had to pick 100 songs you might expect Bob Seger to cover, that probably wouldn't be among them. And it's a cool cover. Let's take a listen to it.
You can't depend on your family. You can't depend on your friends.
And then the other song that he covers is by Leonard Cohen, and it's Democracy.
Yeah, it's a semi-obscure Cohen song. It's from 92.
It's certainly been cited a lot in the age of Trump, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's why it's on there. But it's a very nice cover. There's not a song I would have guessed that he would have gone for.
So let's hear that one as well.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
So he has made a return to the road in the last, what, decade or so, post-Rock and Roll Fame induction?
I think what happened is he had kids pretty late in life. I mean, in his early 40s or so. And he was extremely wealthy, and those truck commercials were just minting money for him.
Yeah, like a rock, of course.
I think for 15 years, that was their song. So it was just money was falling out of the sky onto him, and he had kids. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to be a dad who's never home. I'm going to raise these kids. So he told me for years his life was driving carpools and baseball games and cheerleader practice. He was a full-time dad.
What I love is he sort of just got out of the carpool, put on a bandana, and went back on stage, you know? He's just, that's just who he is.
Then the kids got older, and he got the itch. In 06 or so, he went back on the road, and he didn't dye his hair. He made no attempt to look young. He made no attempt to be cool. He just started playing his songs again. And the shows were fantastic. I saw him tons of times.
So at the start of the interview, you end up asking Bob about his health because in this year of rock and roll deaths and health scares, he had a little bit of a health scare, but hopefully he seems to be okay. What happened exactly?
Well, I go once a tour at the very least, and the nearest show I could get to was in Ohio. He was playing Columbus. So about 2 months ago, I fly out there, I get dinner, I'm walking to the arena when I get the email that the show's canceled.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, shit. But turns out it was not that major. He had some back problems. He had a slipped disc prior to this tour, and his doctor told him that he could go on tour and get surgery afterwards. But if things get worse, that he can't. Then he woke up on the day of the show I was trying to go to, and his leg was hurting. It was kind of dragging. And he called his doctor, and his doctor said, no, like, the tour's done.
But he seems okay.
Yeah, you know, he seemed fine on the phone. He was in good spirits, and he's hoping to rebook the entire tour in the spring.
But, you know, these guys, you know, we have to treasure these guys while we have them. I think that everyone hopefully is learning that, you know. And he can't even play guitar or piano right now, he told you. So you just got to hope he gets better and, you know, probably go to see him if you can.
I am confident. Well, I mean, he's 72 years old. But I see him going for years to come. He seems very motivated.
Tell me more about this album, because there were some themes that he particularly pursued on it.
The big theme is the loss of his friend Glenn Frey. That it's not super widely known, but they were together in the earliest days of the Detroit rock scene. They were friends as teenagers, and Glenn is actually on background vocals on the song Ramblin' Gambling Man.
Wow.
And he wanted to join the band, but Glenn's mom said no, like, that's crazy. You're not going to join some rock and roll band. It's a very weird moment in history.
So he ended up writing like a bunch of songs about him.
Yeah, there's two songs on the album about him, and the title's about him. And Bob loves the Eagles, and he actually co-wrote Heartache Tonight. It's a big hit of theirs.
There's actually a song called Glenn's Song on the album, so
yeah,
I think we can guess what that one's about. So why don't we hear that one?
When I think about you, I always smile.
We're about to play Andy Green's interview with Bob Seger. Let's hear how it went.
Are you feeling better now? Or are you recovering?
Well, I still got pain in my neck, and I'm still on pain medication, and I'm definitely feeling better. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm 6 weeks into a three-month recovery. So, any time now, if the pain stops, I can start singing and playing again. But at least practicing a little bit. But right now, I can't lift more than 5 pounds and stuff like that. I'm pretty restricted. Yeah.
Are you walking easily and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't at first.
Oh, yeah.
But, it was such a shock. I mean, I knew what I was doing, but before I operated on it, I didn't have any pain. But because they went into the back, and my shoulder muscles are so powerful, they said, you're going to have significant pain after this, for a while. And they said it could run as up to, like, January 20th. I got operated on October 20th, so...
So yeah. What happened? Because you were on tour. So what happened exactly?
I guess I ruptured a disc. And the only symptoms I had were tingling in my hands and arms. But the second that showed up, they had warned me if it went to either one of my legs, then stop immediately. Right. So we pulled the plug. I started feeling a little drag in my left leg, and they said, "Oh no, that's it. You're done." We can't risk anymore. And then I went, checked out 4 doctors and 4 different places and made my decision. And now I got to live with it.
So are the shows being rescheduled for next year now?
They'll be rescheduled as soon as the pain stops.
Okay.
Doctors have to say this, it may never stop.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but they have to say that. But it gets better all the time. It really is getting better.
Okay.
The tingling in my hands and arms is probably down to 10% of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And my neck hurts better every day. I got to admit that.
Cool.
I'm on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 1.
It's
just annoying.
Are you playing guitar at all? Well, seated or
no?
Anything?
I can't do anything. Oh, no piano, no guitar, no nothing. Because that runs right back up to the neck.
Right. Gotcha.
And the worst thing is you can't work out or anything. I mean, I'm allowed to do 3-pound weights, but nothing over my head.
No.
And stuff like that. I can walk a lot.
So do you ever imagine at age 72 that you'd still be doing all this? You'd still be touring and making records?
Yeah, I was feeling great. and the band was playing great. That's why it was so hard to stop. I said, right. It's only 30 gigs. I think I could do it, maybe,
Right.
And they said, really, the chance that you're hurting yourself is low unless you start dragging that leg.
Right. I mean, more like back at age 30. Did you ever see
God, no.
At age 72?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
No, I thought I'd be done by 30. My original plan in high school was to do it for 5 years between age 25 and 30, and then buy a motorcycle and drive across Europe. That was my original plan, and then get a real job,
Yeah.
But it didn't work out that way.
No.
I don't know. And then the more you do it, I guess the more you love it. You know how that goes. Yeah.
Are you still tempted to go on that bike trip across Europe?
No.
No?
That's too far now.
Right.
I do ride my cycle, but I only go about 100 100 miles.
Right, yeah. No,
it's just too much.
Yeah. So to switch to the new album here, can you tell me the role that Glenn Frey's passing had in the creation of this album?
Well, I mean, he was my oldest friend in music. You know, I met him in 66, and we actually recorded Ramblin' Gamble Man in 66, in late 66, although we held it till 68,
right.
Late 68 to put it out. But and he sang on it, and we were really good friends. And, you know, we were just peas in a pod. We were so alike, you know. And, you know, and I knew him my whole life. And he would call me, I would call him, you know, asking advice and stuff like that. What do you think of this? And what do you think of that? It was just my closest relationship in music, you know. Mm-hmm. And after I met Henley, he was probably my second closest, you know. Right. But Glenn and I started out together. We were just a couple of, you know, knuckleheads from, he was from Royal Oak and I was from Detroit, you know, and via Ann Arbor, where I grew up. I moved there when I was 5. And, you know, and we were just, I don't know, I was so thrilled when he made it, and he was so thrilled when I made it, you know, 3 years later. You know, we've just been kind of each other's cheerleaders for years. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't expect it. I mean, I saw him 6 months before.
Right.
On an Eagles tour at Joe Louis here.
Yeah.
And they sounded amazing, you know, and they sounded great. And he looked okay. He looked thin, but he didn't look haggard. And he was real excited about doing this Hotel California play. He was working with Robert Wall, at the Comedian, and some other people, and they were. He said, "I'm going to come to Ann Arbor because they got a great theater company there, and we're going to try out some of this stuff in Ann Arbor in the fall." I said, "Well, call me when you get here," and then I never heard anything. And then the next thing I knew, he was in the ICU and he was in a coma. You know, Henley told me, and I couldn't see him. So I never saw him again. You know, it was really heartbreaking. The only people that were allowed in were Cindy and the kids.
Right. And so this album, there's so many moments where you're reflecting on him and that time in life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was such a positive influence in my life. That's the best. It's so, so true.
Yeah.
You know, he always wanted, you know, we were pretty ambitious guys, and so we understood the deal, you know, and the compromises and also the thrills in doing what we do. And, and you know, and I remember when after the 14-year hiatus, when he got back with the Eagles, and I think I saw him first tour, and he said, "I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to still be able to do this at my age."
Wow. You know?
And, and I never thought of it that way, but I sure am now.
Yeah.
At the time, I wasn't thinking of it that way, but I kept championing. I kept pushing him to do it, actually.
Huh.
He was the only Eagle who didn't want to do it.
Right.
For years. And I just said, you know, I think he'd have fun. I think you would.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's just, you guys, they never went away on the radio.
Right,
know?
Yeah, like it's got bigger.
So it's just my tribute to Glenn. And I told Cindy at the memorial that I was thinking about doing it, and she said, "Go ahead. I'm sure it's in good hands, you know?"
Yeah.
And I told her I was going to call it I Knew You When, which is a song from actually 1999 or something like that I'd written.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt perfect. You know, it sounds a little bit faintly like an Eagles song, and there's harmonies in it, and I just thought it was a perfect thing to call it, because it was true. Yeah. I knew him before anybody else in music knew
him. So then what drew you to the Lou Reed song, Busload of Faith?
Well, well, first of all, he passed away, and the first one I did was a Leonard Cohen song, and I said, and I told Cindy that too. I said, I'm just gonna, since I'm doing this, I'm gonna, you know, also salute a couple of my heroes, you know, Lou Reed and Leonard Cohen. First time I heard the song was in a movie with James Woods and Robert Downey Jr. called True Believer, and it was the closing song over the credits.
Yeah.
And so I immediately went out and bought the album, and I think Magic and Loss is my favorite. But at any rate, you know, I just love the imagery of a bunch, this is how I see it, of a bunch of people sitting on a bus, you know, and they're working people, and maybe they can't afford a car, you know, maybe it's just cheaper to take a bus, and they're going to work and singing, "These days you need a busload of faith to get by."
Yeah.
Because of the, maybe because of the, you know, economic division in our country, you know, and everything, and then stagnant wages and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. It just felt like right. It felt right to do it now. And I contacted Lou's estate, and I told them I made a few changes, and they I dropped one verse that was about rape and abortion and stuff. I just wanted to get on the radio if possible. You know? I think that's why a lot of people didn't hear it. You know, maybe certain stations didn't want to touch it. And there was a lot of negative religiosity. I really only changed 5 lines in the whole song.
Did you ever meet Lou?
Never met Lou. No.
Now,
never
that,
did.
Did there's that line in the song where he says you can't depend on the water that made me think.
Oh, that came out of Flint.
Yeah, Flint.
Yeah. No, I said that's gonna be the last line of the song.
Yeah,
Michigan reference there. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think of so many of your songs like Against the Wind and Night Moves and songs on this album where you're singing about your teenage years. That always seems to be a period of your life that even as a pretty young man that you were looking back upon still.
It was probably my favorite time. Mm-hmm. High school, up until high school, I was super shy, and then I developed a bunch of friends from a school across town, and we you know how it is when you're young. We call ourselves the association, you know, and we just, you know, I really came out of my shell.
Yeah,
they were all in the same economic bracket as me. Some were a little well off, but I was definitely lower middle class, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but it didn't matter, you know. And if I didn't have a car, they'd give me a ride someplace. It was just a wonderful time. My high school years were my favorite years.
Yes, so even as a man in your early 30s, you were really thinking back to this time when you wrote so many.
After that, it was like 12 years of, you know, 250 to 300 shows a year, you know, in various bars and this, that, and the other, you know, universities and you know, high schools, gymnasiums, you know. And first time I played with the MC5 was in a gymnasium over on the east side.
Wow. You know, speaking of that, I'd love to hear your first memory of ever seeing Iggy Pop.
Oh, yeah, okay. Birmingham, Michigan, which is not far from me, about 8 miles. And my manager had a place called, I can't remember what it was called. It doesn't matter. But they had some great acts in there, Joe Cocker and stuff like that, and the Fleetwood Mac with the great guitarist Jeremy Spencer, and the other one, like, really good. I can't think of the guy. He was a guy that became kind of religious.
Is that Peter Green?
Peter Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just saw great bands there all the time. And then, of course, we'd play it as well. And the first time I saw it, the first time I met Iggy was he was playing drums on a Rationals record. Rationals were a local band.
Yeah.
And I met him at, and his name at that point was Dave Osterberg, you know.
Right.
And he's a good drummer, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I saw him live, he had just tremendous charisma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, and I love Now I Want to Be Your Dog. I still love that song.
Yeah.
and he's a really nice guy. I've run into him down through the years because we're both real good friends with Don Was. And I've always loved him. I remember I went to a show where was it? On Ford Road, a B.B. King show.
Yeah.
I walked in to see B.B. King. He was playing a small club. And there's Iggy Pop. We sat together and watched B.B. King.
I'm sure seeing the Stooges in like 1967, that must have been astounding, just the energy and the feralness of that.
They were really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, and got great reactions from the crowd.
Yeah, you covered Leonard Cohen's Democracy on the album.
Yeah.
You sort of singing about the state of America now? When were you thinking about that? As you were?
Well, it was one of my favorite songs of all time. Yes, it, yes, that's part of it. But Leonard actually died the day Trump was elected.
Right. You
know, the future album that Leonard did is my favorite Leonard Cohen album of all time.
Yeah.
I've got them all, but that's my favorite. Yeah. And I love Waiting for the Miracle. I love Democracy. I love Closing Time. There's so many great songs on that record. Mm-hmm. But Democracy was always the one that stuck with me. And then I read that he actually wrote it about the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Right.
In 91, I think. And, of course, I'd always studied his lyrics, like I did Joni Mitchell's, like I did Tom Waits, like, you know, all my favorite lyric writers. And, you know, I just felt like it felt right, you know, to do it.
Yeah.
And this bass player that I always use in Nashville, I sent him the song. Mm-hmm. I said, I want to do this. What do you think? And he said, he'd never heard it. His name is Glenn Worf. Mm-hmm. And he said, it's a masterpiece, man. We got to do that. So I got a bunch of people together. I took the horns and the girls down to Nashville with me, and Rob and Moose were on it, and my guitar player and piano player, guitar player. And, you know, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We did it live. First take, by the way.
Wow.
First take.
So in the aftermath of Tom Petty and Greg Allman and David Bowie, all these people, it's just been brutal 2 years. Just how do you feel after all that? Do you think more
about it? Well, you sure think about your mortality.
Yeah.
And you say, you know, it's important to do now what you really want to do, you know, and follow your own personal vision. And it's just reinforced that, you know, and, you know, because you don't know how much time you got.
Yeah. I mean, are you more grateful for every day?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yes. Mm-hmm. And now I think I work even harder on the show and on the stage. I did some songs that I couldn't do because they were so difficult, like The Fire Inside.
Yeah.
And You'll Accompany Me Very High. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm going to do them anyway. I don't care.
Right.
I really wore myself out on this tour, but they went over great. I couldn't believe You'll Accompany Me. People were singing, it knew every word.
Wow.
You know, they sang every word, you know, and I guess that's the power of the greatest hits going 10 million, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's, and The Fire Inside's on it as well. And I got a new drummer. Mm-hmm. The first time I used him was on Democracy.
Yeah.
His name is Greg Morrow. Yeah. And I said, hey, Greg, you want to go out with us? And I've just discovered that in the rehearsal stage for this tour, he could play anything.
Oh.
So all, you know, anything I wasn't so sure other drummers could play, he could play.
So,
and I said, okay, now I can do him.
So was Don Brewer busy? He couldn't make this tour?
Don was busy. It came up real fast, and we'd have had to delay it a lot.
Right.
And I said, Don, I'm sorry, man. I really want to do this. I want to get out and you know, and start playing these songs.
Yeah.
And so he understood. You know, as a matter of fact, we used Grand Funk on a couple of our shows. And and he's still a great friend of mine, and I think he's a wonderful drummer. But I just wanted to get out there.
Right.
You know, and I always have that problem with Don because he is very loyal to his guys, and we constantly have to book around them, and so this time we just didn't have that luxury.
So you talked about the day that Trump won. You know, he won in places like Michigan with white voters.
Oh yeah.
Did that surprise you, or do you understand? Like, people?
Well, I understand it because I live here, and the second you got out of town, every rural area. I never saw a Clinton sign. I saw a Trump sign.
And so how do you understand that?
It was the rural people who elected them, you know? And they jumped on it. And well, I think they're very dissatisfied with Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought he could, you know, do something different. And so they did.
It's sort of sad that he's not working to sort of to make their lives worse in a lot of ways. I mean,
I was at the Kennedy Center honors, you know, honoring Glenn, thinking heartache tonight. And I'm in the East Room listening to Obama, and then all the cast, we were put in the East Room, and the Eagles are up on stage and all the other honorees and stuff, and then we got in a line to meet, you know, Obama and Michelle, you know, and my wife talked to Michelle, and I talked to Barack, and I just said, Mr. President, I just want to say one thing, please, you know, thank you for your wisdom and your dignity, you know, and, you know, I Henley called me, how'd you like it? And I said, man, what a great week, you know, I got to be with my best friends in music, you guys, and I got to meet my favorite president of my lifetime.
So to switch gears now, your music is now on streaming services, so why'd that finally change and happen?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even look into that end. That's where Mike Boyle, you probably talked to today, and my manager, Punch, deal with all that stuff. And they figure out the timing and everything on when they want to do this or that or the other. Because we've got such a long contract. It's with Capitol. We've been with them 50 years now.
Yeah.
And the longest tenured artist on Capitol Records. And at any rate, new media was a thing put in our contract way back in 67. So we have to renegotiate it so much, you know, what's the deal? And that's Mike and Punch's end. And I just leave it up to them. And they say, okay, we're ready to do it or we're not, or, you know.
But are you happy that so much of your music is now freely available on Spotify and streaming services?
Yeah. Although I remember, for years, my manager would go in. I remember when we put out Face the Promise, and he said he'd walk into Capitol and see all the execs sitting there. He says, and he'd say, first thing he'd say is, I don't want to talk about Spotify. And then he'd call me and he'd say, the first hour and a half was all about Spotify.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, okay, you keep talking. I'm not going to comment. You know, I'll listen. You know, now can we talk about the album?
Yeah.
Or the CD or whatever. Yeah. And it's been an ongoing process.
Right.
He's a pretty pugnacious guy. Pug,
yeah, I mean,
know?
I think the worry is that with your music, that for so many years it was unavailable, that a lot of new young people, they had no access to your songs.
Right.
Did that alarm you at all?
Yes. But at the same time, I mean, I can't complain about my success with Punch, my manager. You know, he hasn't been wrong too many times.
Right.
And it could be a reason why we were the biggest selling catalog album between 2000 and 2010.
Right.
Nobody outsold us. Nobody on earth outsold us.
Right. But
it could be because we stayed off that grid.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, and we've been touring since 2010 or before 2006. And so that might be the major factor why we did make Diamond 10 million.
Huh. And so what's it going to take to get early albums like that are like Brand New Morning and Mongrel back in print?
Jack White's always asking me about that. He wants to remix them all.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll do it for free. No, I say, I wouldn't make you do it for free.
Right.
But it just seems like I'm on to the next thing and then the next tour.
Right.
And I don't have the time to go back there just yet.
Right.
You know, maybe when I retire, I'll get serious about it. But it's just, because it's funny, because when the Eagles, even before they played with Ronstadt, Glenn called me up and said, we're doing Big River from Mongrel. And you know, life is like a big river. And, you know, just to know those guys were playing that at bars before they even knew Ronstadt, Henley and them. And, you know, it's there's some good stuff in there. But just that's a time factor. You know, I'm always on the next, and I get excited about the next, and all I want to do is write. I love writing.
Right. You know, it's sort of interesting. So many of your peers focus a lot of energy on polishing up their legacies with documentaries and books and big reissues of their old albums and all your remasters,
right.
but you've never really cared about that stuff.
Well, I've only got so much energy.
Right.
And I try to put it into the music.
Mm-hmm.
Or the performance, or you know, rehearsing with the band, or, mm-hmm. or making the show better, or making the album better that I'm working on. I did go back a little bit on this album.
Do you ever think about writing a book about your life?
Yeah, I think about it. I started it one time,
huh.
And I tell you what I bought. I bought. I don't know if you know who John McPhee is, but he's won a Pulitzer, and and he's 86 years old, and he's been teaching the same writing class since 1976, and he just put out a book called Draft Number 4, and it's his writing class that he's been teaching at Princeton since 1976. So I got, that's the next book up. Right now I'm finishing Grant. Oh my God, it takes forever. It's 1,000 pages. I'm up in the 700s, but high in the 700s, but I got a ways to go. And that's my next book.
Huh. But so you are thinking that you might write a book about your life one day?
Well, I actually set up a computer at the right height to type one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I got a writing desk. I got everything ready. I don't know what I'll write. But I may write about me. I don't know.
You wouldn't use a ghostwriter. You'd do it yourself.
Oh, no, I do it myself, yeah.
And how about, like, a documentary on your life to hire, like, a great director to do that?
I think the problem with us is we haven't gotten any film.
Wow.
Eagles were smart. They made a lot of film.
Right.
We've got film, but our lights weren't very good.
Okay.
And it's kind of cruddy film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lighting isn't good. That's all I can say. So the Eagles were really smart. They got film when they were young.
Right.
You know, they took good care of it. We were just busy touring. You know.
Right. You weren't thinking about.
We couldn't wait to get on stage again.
Yeah. Are you curious to see Bruce on Broadway?
I am. I would like to see that. Right now, we're hoping that maybe we can start. In mid-March, it might be a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to do these. We got 200,000 tickets out there, so we want to do the 20 shows we got left.
Mm-hmm.
That's our first order of business,
and as
early as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all health dependent, you know.
Yeah, no, they're not.
And I can't really book anything until I got the clearance from the doctors.
Now, there are lots of veteran acts now who play their albums in concert. Does the thought of a Night Moves concert or a Live Bullet concert, does it appeal to you?
Yeah, I like it when I saw Bruce doing The River, and I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, not really. What I want to do is do this album. The only one we got to play was Busload.
Right.
And we released that kind of as a work record for radio,
mm-hmm.
and we were playing that, and then we only played it for like 2 weeks, and I was off the road.
Nah.
You know, and we chose that one because everybody's on it. You know,
right.
The girls, the horns, everybody, and it's unusual compared to the rest of the set.
Right.
For us, it's just stone straight ahead, Lou Reed. I
mm-hmm.
but when I do somebody else, I really try to do them. Like them.
Right.
You know, when I sang Heartache, you know, I wanted to sing it as much like Glenn. When I sang a little bit of Life in the Fast Lane, I tried to sing it exactly like Don.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's honoring somebody, I think.
Right.
You sing it exactly like them, as close as you can.
Yeah.
And I'd go over and over and over. I was driving Vince Gill nuts. He was next to me in the basement. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, I just feel like this is how I want to do it. You know,
so,
I want to sound as much like those guys as I can.
So, tell me your favorite TV show now the Good Wife is gone.
Madam Secretary.
Oh yeah, why?
Love it. I just think it's got great writing, great characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very modern. The mm-hmm. thinking. You know, and I'm into world affairs. I read a lot, you know, and I read the New York Times every day,
mm-hmm.
Top to bottom, you know, and that's what I read when I go to bed, and watch a lot of political shows, and try to keep up with what's happening.
Right, and your favorite movie that you've seen all year?
Favorite movie I've seen? I'd probably Hell on High Water.
So to just wrap up on a previous point, why not hire a producer, someone you trust, to sort of mix your old records and just get them out?
Because I know exactly what I want.
Oh, okay.
And I know every time. I mean, I write a lot of the parts in my head, like mm-hmm. the guitar part. I wrote that on guitar mm-hmm. for See Inside and stuff. And,
yeah.
And I write everything in my head. And I know, you know, all the session guys that I use say, we'd rather have somebody who knows what he wants than somebody who doesn't know what he wants.
I started talking about your early albums. Why not hire a person to sort of master them? Then
like, I did sort of. I kind of had the Muscle Shoals rhythm section in the 70s with mm-hmm. me.
Yeah,
and they were kind of producers. You know, we shared the producing credit. Oh. And but I wanted it more my way.
You know, I'm sort of asking about your early albums that aren't back in print now, about hiring a person to get them out. I mean, yeah.
Say that again?
Oh, no, I'm just wondering why, if you don't have time to get your first four or five albums back in print, to hire, yeah. to give it to a Jack White or somebody to get them back out. Is that why you don't want to do that?
I don't know, because the second I'm done with the tour,
mm-hmm.
I want to take maybe a month off, and then I can't wait to write something new.
Oh, okay.
And I just, you know, I just did a thing for Sirius Radio on the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I love their old stuff, but I also love their new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, from Hell Freezes Over, from Long Road to Eden.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. They were freed up. You know, they just tried something different, and I love the fact that they did that. And that's what I can't wait to do, just try something completely different.
But there's a lot of
where the hell am I going to go now?
But there's so many of your fans that are just dying to hear those first few records. I mean, are you sympathetic to their plight?
No. To be honest, right. I mean, it's like you're just going way back there, and I don't know. You know, like my son, he's a writer.
Yeah.
And he just went to film school.
Oh.
And he did his thesis film, and on this album, his favorite line on this album is, "Movement feels like freedom. Sometimes that's all you need." Hmm. And he heard that in Runaway Train.
Yeah.
And he said, "Wow, Dad, that's cool." And that's what I love. I think as you get more mature and older, your songs mature. You know, I think one of the most mature Eagles songs is Henley's "Learn to Be Still."
Yeah.
You know, that's my mantra. Learn to listen better. Learn to analyze better. Why do you like something? What makes it good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes it's a performance, sometimes it's a song. It can be one or the other. Sometimes the song's not so good, but the performance is so fantastic. It carries the song, you know. There's all different reasons to love music.
Yeah, just a totally random question to wrap up. Now, was Night Moves, is it partially inspired by Jungle Land because there's two bridges in there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I had the first two verses forever. Mm-hmm. It took me 6 months to write it, and I just kept coming back to it. Nah, that's not it. Nah, that's not it. And then I heard Bruce's Born to Run album,
mm-hmm.
and I heard Jungle Land, and I remember calling Henley and saying, you know, have you heard Jungle Land? He said, no, I don't know if I'm into him. I said, well, how about this? We'll meet neath that giant Exxon sign that gives this fair city light.
Wow.
Ooh, okay. I'll check that out. You know, and the song killed me. The album killed me. It had so much, you know, so much gusto, so much plain, wonderful rock and roll spirit. Yeah. And remind me a little bit about Phil Spector, whom I love too, you know, in his pre-Beatle days, and they were in the Wall mm-hmm. of Sound and all that. And it was a record that won my heart. That's still one of my favorite record.
Do you talk with Bruce often? Do you see him these days?
I don't see him often, but I do see him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would see every 6 months.
Oh, wow.
You know? And I will go see a show once the dust clears, or they've extended it, so now I got a better chance.
Yeah.
I can't go see anybody right now. I can't even go to a concert. I'm stuck at home.
Well, I'm sure it's very temporary. But, Bob, I will let you go now. This has been great. Thank you so much. And get better soon. I want to see you play again. So, heal up.
Oh, well, thanks, Andy.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care,
buddy. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that's it. That was Andy Green talking with Bob Seger. I'm Brian Hyatt, and this has been Rolling Stone Music Now. We'll be back with another episode at 1 p.m. Eastern here on SiriusXM's Volume, Channel 106. In the meantime, download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us some nice reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, but especially iTunes. And we'll see you next week. Happy New Year. I'm Brian Hyatt, and this has been Rolling Stone Music Now.